Blog Talk Radio.
February edition of Parenting Your Challenging Child. Dr. Ross Green here, along with the Director of Outreach at Lives in the Balance, Kim Hopkins. Kim, how are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing well. The snow is still beautiful. Still a little too cold for my taste, but that's the northeastern winter for you. We're going to find out if Jen Jen and
Stella
are going to be joining us today. In the meantime, since we always, by the way, if you do have a question or comment, call 347-994-2981 and press 1. And we have somebody who's been waiting for almost 13 minutes at this point from Delaware. So we always give callers the top priority on the program. Kim, are you ready to start?
Let's do it.
Here we go. Area code 302, you are on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Kind of new to the program. I learned about you somewhat recently. I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts. I've been all over your website watching your videos. I have an 8.5-year-old daughter. I won't say any names. And she's the one who has definitely some lagging skills, and we have plenty of unsolved problems. I also have a 6-year-old son and a 3.5-year-old son, who obviously are by no means perfect, but definitely do not have as many lagging skills. And I think the 8.5-year-old recognizes that. And that is definitely causing a lot of competition in her mind between her and especially the 6-year-old, which is leading to some of the unlucky behaviors. I did do the ALSEP. We have, for her, I'm saying 10 lagging skills, and at the moment I have 16 unsolved problems, and I don't think I have them all yet. I think that's just the ones I've recognized. So I guess, you know, in my head, everything's kind of a priority, but I know we can't do them all at once. So I guess I'm looking for maybe some guidance on how to prioritize them. Right now, I've kind of just been like addressing them as they come up. With her, you know, when we calm down, kind of saying, you know, can we try to like go back and maybe think about like what, because she goes from, you know, 0 to 100. So, you know, you were feeling great. We were happy. We were cheerful. And then all of a sudden, obviously something happened that made you feel differently. Can we try to like figure out what that was? Let's work through it so that, you know, hopefully we can figure out a way so that doesn't happen again. Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of looking for some guidance on kind of where to go and how to pick where to start kind of thing.
Got it. Well, here's the deal. First of all, you've got a lot of the lingo of the model down pat already. So the fact that you know about the distinction between lucky and unlucky concerning behaviors says you have been listening carefully and studying carefully, which is great.
I have.
The fact that your daughter has, what did you say, 8 lagging skills?
10.
That tells us why she's responding so poorly to problems and frustration. Problems tell you what problems and frustrations she's responding poorly to.
Mm-hmm.
The whole goal of doing the ALSEP is to identify, as you have done, is to identify those unsolved problems proactively. So the lagging skills are your explanation. The unsolved problems are what you're actually going to be working on with your daughter and trying to solve. But the reason you were able to identify those 16 unsolved problems is because they're predictable.
Right.
And you're right, there may be a few more, but well done on the 16. But now you don't have to wait until they come up to try to solve them. Now you can solve them proactively. I think all of that probably makes good sense to you at this point. The usual algorithm for which unsolved problems to pick are safety, any unsolved problems that are setting in motion safety issues are a high priority because safety is your top priority. If none of the unsolved problems are causing safety issues, you want to either go with frequency, the unsolved problems setting in motion concerning behaviors most often or getting in the way most often, or gravity, the unsolved problems having the greatest negative impact on your daughter's life or the lives of others.
Okay.
That's the usual algorithm.
So we have no official diagnosis, mostly because she masks really well. She's none of that, which is great on the one hand. I mean, you know, school goes wonderfully. She's academically right where she needs to be. School says she's wonderfully behaved. This only comes out with me, her brother, obviously, and then when she is in, like, a one-on-one situation, so it comes out at private swim lessons, but it wouldn't come out necessarily at, like, a team field hockey practice. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
The absence of a diagnosis, quite frankly, is neither here nor there as it relates to you picking which unsolved problems you want to start with her.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of feel like they go into four categories, like when she has any type of a demand placed on her. Like, I did read into PDA a little bit, and I do think there might be something there. But, again, I know you don't care about that. But any type of a demand, even something as simple as, like, getting dressed or brushing her teeth, she sees me helping the 3.5-year-old with it, and so she wants me to help her with it. She doesn't want to do it independently. And there's definitely some anxiety there.
But let's stick with the algorithm.
Okay.
Irrespective of diagnosis, irrespective of category, are any of the unsolved problems you've identified setting in motion safety issues?
No, just not safety issues for her. Safety issues just of her hitting her brothers or, you know, trying to, like, squeeze me or things like the unlucky behaviors that come out because
Counts.
But no,
Do you have a sense of which unsolved problems are most likely to cause her to be unsafe with her brother or unsafe with you?
Basically when he gets any type of attention from me, when the attention shifts from her to him, then there all of a sudden is an issue. And sometimes she takes it out on me and sometimes she takes it out on him. So, you know, when we would be driving in the car, for example, and she has had her turn to talk, and then he takes a turn to talk, then all of a sudden it's, why are you paying attention to him? Why is he talking? And she'll, you know, lash out and hit him across the car.
So you're in the ballpark. First of all, those would definitely count as safety issues, so those are going to be priorities. Now we just need to help you word your unsolved problems well. And whether it's shifting your attention from her to her brother or you doing something with her brother and not with her, you would just need to get a little bit more specific about the wording of the unsolved problems. The car one seems pretty specific already. But the first thing I would say is you do have safety issues, and therefore you do have some priorities that relate to safety.
Okay. Obviously, I need to ask her. You're absolutely right, because Plan B is involving her in it. But I do suspect with all of the problems that go back to her brother, it is that I'm paying attention to somebody besides her. Because she doesn't even like it when I pay attention, when I talk to another adult. I mean, she'll come over and grab me and say, why are you talking to them? Or if she knows we're going to a social activity where I will be talking to other adults, she'll try to jump in ahead of time before I get there and say, you're not allowed to talk to anybody. I want you to pay attention to me. You don't need to talk to other grown-ups. So I think it definitely goes back. There's a lot of specific unsolved problems that go back to the root of her not wanting me to pay attention to anybody else but her.
Your big decision is whether you want to include the word attention in the wording of the unsolved problem, or just be more specific, like difficulty if mom is talking to brother instead of you.
Right.
Difficulty if your mom is talking to another adult, and you could be more specific about that, of course, when you're around. So I'm a little worried that throwing the word attention in there could be leading the witness a little bit just in the mere wording of the unsolved problem, and you don't want to do that.
Sure.
But it certainly sounds to me like you will have at least three unsolved problems that do cause safety issues. And with regard to your original question, where should you start? That's where you should start.
Okay. All right.
Now I'm going to see if – go ahead.
Is it okay if I keep talking?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So some of the other – I guess my other question – or I have a lot of questions. I could probably talk with you for the whole 45 minutes, but is some of the things that we have unsolved problems with are things that I necessarily can't control. So a huge issue every day is I don't want to go to school. We start every morning with I don't want to go to school. It's a power struggle to get her dressed in the morning, get her to eat some breakfast, get her to get in the car and put her seatbelt on. And I have broken that down with her because when she gets back in the school at the end of the day, she always seems happy. And when I ask her how her day was, she usually says good or okay. It's not horrible. So we have broken that down to, yes, she likes her teacher. Yes, she has friends at school. Yes, school is fine overall, but the day is too long, in her opinion. She's away from me for too long. She misses me. And we have come up with some suggestions, like I put notes in her lunchbox so that, and in her Chromebook so that she sees little notes from me throughout the day. She has an Apple Watch. She can walkie-talkie me when she's out at recess to say hello to me. So we have tried to come up with some ways to make it not seem so long, but still in her mind, it's too long. But obviously I can't control that, you know, and I can't take her out half day every day because she feels like the school day is too long. So, and another thing is swim lessons. She has a real issue with going to swim lessons, but in my mind, that's a safety issue. We live in an area where we are near and in water quite frequently. So to me, that's a non-negotiable as far as safety is concerned. So what do I do when she is having difficulty getting past something, but it's something that I really can't control?
Well, and I'm going to ask our co-host, because I think Stella and Jen have joined us now. But the first thing I'll say to that is just because you don't have complete control over an issue does not mean that it's not a problem that needs to be solved.
Right. Absolutely.
So the fact that you don't have perfect control over it, that doesn't necessarily mean anything as it relates to can you still try to solve the problem with her. And it sounds like you've already tried to solve the school problem with her. I wouldn't put swimming lessons in the safety category the way you have. We usually reserve the non-negotiable category, and we don't really even call it non-negotiable because Plan B is not really about negotiating. When we're talking about Plan A, which is where you're imposing a solution, talking more about surprising, emergent safety issues, I still think you have a problem that needs to be solved as it relates to difficulty going to swimming, information to gather from her, and a solution to try to get to. But let me ask Jen and Kim and Stella if they have things they want to weigh in on here.
We're all afraid to talk over each other.
You're giggling, so you get to go first if you want to. Stella?
I think it was Jennifer giggling.
It was?
I think it was.
Got it. Yeah. Jennifer, go ahead. Maybe yeah. Stella's not with us.
Maybe Stella's not. I don't know.
Jen, I haven't
talked to her this morning. It's funny, as I'm listening to you talk about your daughter wanting to be with you all the time. It's one of those double-edged swords. There's a piece of you that wants that and a piece of you that doesn't want that, is my guess. There's something very flattering about your kid wanting all of your attention until it makes you want to stick forks in your eyes. But
I'm at that lovely phase in my 40s, which I'm sure you can interpret, where some days I'm totally okay with it, and some days I want to stick forks in my eyes, and you never know which one of me you're going to get that day.
Yes, I understand that. It's hard because, you know, that brings a whole different level of other things into it too, with parental guilt and you know, you don't ever feel like it's okay to not want to be around your kids, except that sometimes you really don't want to be around your kids.
You know, really, it's not so much I don't want to be around her. It's more the parental guilt of, am I ignoring the other two? Are the other two not getting the attention that they deserve also? And the six-year-old boy is very sensitive, and I'm afraid that he might eventually have, you know, some self-esteem issues and stuff from potentially not getting the attention that he knows his older sister is getting. So it's more that for me.
Okay. Yeah, I missed the very beginning of when you and Dr. Green were talking.
I have something to add about that, actually. If you want me to jump in, Jennifer, I don't know.
Sure, Kim, go ahead.
Okay. So I heard you kind of say, you know, a lot of these unsolved problems go back to the core of her wanting to be with you all the time. That, to me, is actually sort of a solution she has in her head. I don't know that that would need to be drilled a little bit more about, you know, what does that do for her? What is, you know, having you all to herself do for her? What does she tell herself when you're talking to brother and not her? What story is she telling herself? What's her brain saying to her? What does that mean to her? Because that's really the core. It's expressed as, you know, wanting you all the time, you know, and yet I think there's probably more to it. So I would keep those drilling strategies in mind. And if you haven't seen it, we do have a drilling cheat sheet to kind of help you ask questions in different ways to try to get at what that's about.
Okay.
And the other thing that I was going to say is that it's okay to take time to work through a plan B conversation. Sometimes it can be very frustrating when you feel like, well, we've talked about this and we've talked about this and I still feel like we haven't gotten anywhere. But sometimes the more complex the problem, the more conversations it's going to take. Even when it doesn't seem like there's a possible solution, I'm amazed at some of the things that we've been able to eventually find solutions for in the long run. But it's taken going back and revisiting something many times over to get there. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do that. Don't put a limit on your time just because it feels like it's taking forever.
Right.
So, Mom, what do you think? Right. You've gotten quite a bit of guidance here.
I have.
You now have a decent sense about which ones to prioritize, what difficulties you could run into in gathering information from her, but it does sound to me like you are well on your way. Any other questions before we move on to other emails on the program?
I guess if it's okay, just one more. I guess, I mean, again, I know we don't like to go back to the diagnosis, but I do think that a lot of the unsolved problems, like at least part of the root of it, is anxiety. And even if I do the best I can as far as, like, you know, telling her all the unknowns that I can possibly tell her, warning her of transitions, you know, all of those kinds of things, if there is still that element of anxiety there, is there any suggestions of how I can kind of work through that with, because I don't know that she's necessarily going to know. For her, I think, like you're saying, what is at the root of her wanting to be with me? I think that she needs a lot of hugs, and I think that helps lessen her anxiety. But if it's a situation where she can't, that's not going to be, you know, possible because she's not with me, or, you know, something like that, is there another way to kind of help her work through her anxiety or find solutions to those things? Does that make sense?
It does. Anxiety as a standalone issue is a little nebulous. And I'm not suggesting that she's not anxious. It's just that even with anxiety, if we said to you, your daughter is anxious, you don't really have anywhere to go with that because it's still too vague, right?
Okay,
Her anxiety is going to manifest itself in a variety of ways. As it relates to this model, hopefully she can distill how her anxiety is affecting her into concerns. And here's the interesting, once you hear her concerns, what's making it hard to meet a particular expectation,
right,
it becomes apparent, I suspect, that just saying anxiety isn't specific enough to be actionable. You need more than anxiety so that you can try to address her concerns. So I guess that's the main thing. If somebody brought a kid to me for treatment and said they're anxious, I would have absolutely no idea what to do next until I found out what was meant by that and what specific concerns could be addressed that, by the way, may or may not trace back to the kid's anxiety. So it's good for you to know that your daughter's anxious, but also good to know that that's not really specific enough for you to know what direction to go into as it relates to helping her.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And that's a big reason that we're not into labels. If I said to you, by the way, she also has ADHD, you don't know what to do next. If I said to you, she also has oppositional defiant disorder, you haven't been led any closer to her lagging skills, which you now know, or to the specific problems that you could be busy solving with her. So that's why we are not particularly enthusiastic about those global labels. They don't tell us enough about what's going on with the kid to actually do something about it and help them.
That makes sense. Yep, you're right. Okay.
Good for you to know your daughter's anxious. You need more details than that.
Right. Yep. Yep. Okay. Yep. So that just goes back to more of the drilling about the specific unsolved problems then.
You got it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you for calling in.
Can I add one more thought there?
Oh, of course. Yeah, please.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that even in the context of a Plan B conversation, we get caught up in when you're talking about trying to help her with her anxiety. I know that sometimes, you know, you can't necessarily solve a feeling. and I have gotten caught up in an ugly circle of trying to solve anxiety. And then when it doesn't solve the anxiety, my son will sometimes then get even more anxious because we didn't solve the problem that in that immediate moment that was causing the anxiety, which means that he's not getting his anxiety right, which then makes him even more anxious. So on occasion, well, actually more than on occasion, you know, leading with traditional empathy in those moments has been very helpful for us. I'm not going to try and make you feel better. I'm just going to acknowledge the fact that you're feeling that way and sit with you with it for a little bit, because I know that it's not an easy way to feel. You don't always have to help it in terms of solving it. Sometimes it's enough to just let them know that you're holding space with them in that anxious moment.
I understand, yeah.
Mom, you are welcome to call in again anytime you wish.
Okay, thank
you. We appreciate
you
calling in today.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care. So an interesting example related to anxiety. Back when I used to be flight anxious, if I was just telling people that I was anxious, I would have probably gotten an intervention that was very global to try to knock down my anxiety. But I wasn't anxious most of the time. So now let's narrow it down further. I'm anxious about being on airplanes. Okay, now we have a specific focal point. Now let's do some drilling with my former self. What are you anxious about on airplanes? I'm worried that the plane will crash and I will die. Let's drill further. I am worried that every noise the airplane makes is an indication that the plane just broke and is going to crash and I will die. And I'm very uncomfortable being at 35,000 feet in an aluminum tube filled with gasoline, something human beings really haven't been doing for most of human evolution. All right, now we have something to work on. And what's interesting is one of the things that was most curative for me was a video game, Microsoft Flight Simulator, where I learned what the noises on the airplane meant. And that helped me recognize that when those noises occurred, the plane was not broken, it was not crashing, and I was not about to die. Between that and thousands and thousands of flights, I'm no longer flight anxious. But if all we had been working on was my anxiety, we really wouldn't have had a target to aim at because anxiety is too global. Kim, Jen, anything to add to that before we turn to our next caller?
It just made me think of my own example where people were trying to, like, think that they knew what was going on inside my head around some anxiety, and they kept guessing wrong because they weren't asking me. Right, and it was actually quite specific, so I appreciate your example.
Yeah. Now, to that point, if I had said to people, I'm flight anxious, and they had started theorizing, right, I think you're flight anxious because you're shy. Yeah, that's it. You're shy, and you're flight anxious because you're worried that you'll have to interact with people on the airplane, right? That's it. So let's get you interacting. Let's get you some trained up on interacting with people so you're no longer anxious about interacting with people on the airplane. There's a good example of people thinking they know what's going on with me without asking and applying an intervention based on what they think is going on with me that is completely off base because they didn't ask. Now, to mom's credit, she's asking. It's just that anxiety is a little bit too nebulous for her to sink her teeth into. Now, Mom may have called back. Let me see. Mom, is that you? Did you have another question? She's dropped. Okay. Let us move on to some email for today, shall we?
Thank you.
This parent is saying, I just read The Explosive Child and have been trying to apply its insights with our 7-year-old son. He's a wonderful kid, creative, silly, fun, funny, loves his sister and his dog. He has some very close friends because of COVID. He hasn't spent as much time with them outside of school as we would all like. So I think he's missed some valuable socialization opportunities. Mom then goes on to list many, many lagging skills. regarding listening, my son has told me that sometimes he just doesn't hear us, but had no suggestions on how to handle this. Thus, my husband and I are trying to be more thoughtful about how we talk to him. He needs direct communication instead of general directions or group conversation. At school, he's got a sticker box, in parentheses, I know how much you love these, to help encourage him to stay on track. At home, we've concluded that incentives don't work and are instead trying to apply the guidance in The Explosive Child and hope that this will transfer to his approach at school. Regarding keeping hands and feet to himself, this is an ongoing issue at school and we are increasingly concerned about it. Some recent examples, he will touch someone's leg as they are walking by for no reason. He hit a friend for giving away an answer during a group conversation. He put his food in front of another student's face without reason. During a game outside, he was sitting on a friend, and when the game was over, she told him to get off, but he did not despite repeated requests. And today he grabbed a friend's leg and would not let go, so she kicked him in the head more than once. Afterward, he is remorseful. During our conversation about this today, I finally learned that he thinks he's being funny, although he admitted nobody's laughing. He told us that when he's thinking of touching someone in the future, he will think about whether that's smart, which is a good idea. He's a kid, so it won't be perfect as he's very impulsive, but hopefully he can try to use this approach. Every day we're having conversations to the effect of the golden rule and listening to others to ensure that they listen to you too, but I feel like he's going to start tuning us out soon. Do you have any suggestions on how we can positively work with him? I've been talking a lot during this program, so Jen and Kim, one of you is first.
Your call, Jen. You or me?
Well, I just, as you were reading that, Dr. Green, I was thinking every time this mom says, without reason, in my head I was translating that to, for a reason I haven't found yet.
Same here.
Because there's always a reason. The kid may not know it even yet, but there's something happening that's making that happen. There's always something. It's just a question of finding it.
Well, and Mom did tell us that he thinks he's being funny. But I would want her to drill further. But sorry, Jen, there I go again, interrupting. Keep going. Sorry.
That's okay. I think that in a conversation outside of that moment, he probably knows he's not being funny, and he probably knows that the other person isn't enjoying whatever he's doing, and he probably already knows that he shouldn't be touching people when they don't want to be touched, and all of those things are things that he already knows because he's already learned them. It's just that in those moments, what he knows is not necessarily making it from one part of his brain to the other. You know, so continuing to try to reinforce those things that he already knows isn't really going to help. Those were my two initial thoughts in listening.
Got it. Kim, what's your two cents?
Well, I agree on the for no reason, because there actually was some clues about the reason. Aside from the thinking it's funny, but, you know, when there was many examples and I couldn't write very fast, so I might get them wrong. But, you know, when the game was over and it was, you know, time to not be sitting on his friend anymore, that is a reason to not know what to do, or maybe to think it's funny. And, you know, and I agree that I'd like to know more about the funny part. Is he thinking it's fun, it's going to be funny to someone else? Is that his goal? Because some kids are really after just their own kicks, you know? So if it's funny for him, and it doesn't really matter to him if it's not funny to somebody else, but he's understanding that it can be funny to him, but it has to be okay with somebody else. He's got that already, right? So maybe the thinking, is it smart, might need to be tweaked a little bit, as far as like, well, I'm going to think this is funny, will they think it's funny? I frankly know plenty of adults who their sense of humor doesn't really translate to other people. And so they're thinking it's funny and kind of stymied why somebody else wouldn't think it's funny, you know? But it sounds like from all the examples given, I'm hoping that an ALSIP has been done, because there are a lot of rich, specific examples just in this email, right? And so, you know, the ones that are occurring at school are going to be a little harder for the parents to work on, because they don't have firsthand knowledge and they probably have to coordinate with somebody at school, but that might give them an in to somebody who's kind of sensitive to their way of thinking about him, because I heard, you know, mom say that she's, you know, wanting school to not be doing the sticker box and to be instead working on lagging skills and unsolved problems. So coordinating with somebody at school who's got some firsthand information and observation for some of those school-based ones would, you know, might be a good in and might be a way to solve them faster. Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think that all the examples sounded like he thought he was being funny. I think that there were other things that other things could have been going on. And so, you know, again, just a plug for doing a complete ALSIP and picking your priority to start with and being split and specific in doing that, because you might be surprised at what you find out is actually happening.
Thank you for that. Mom's last question was, do you have any suggestions on how we can positively work with him? And Mom, my answer is, I think you've started already. Keep going. If you haven't, as Kim was saying, if you haven't yet used the ALSIP to identify all of your son's lagging skills and unsolved problems, I would do that. You'll need to prioritize, because I have a feeling he's going to have more than three unsolved problems to work on, and you're not going to be able to work on more than three at once. I personally and professionally am skeptical about whether stickers are going to help him stay on track. I have a feeling about that, but I could be wrong. And my only last comment is, Kim, I hope that the adults who you were referring to who aren't as funny as they think they are wasn't a reference to me, but anyways, it doesn't really matter.
Oh, boy. We better move on before I respond.
That's exactly right. Before you have a chance to answer, let's get to another email. This is probably going to be the last one of the day. This one says, loved your book, but looking for more help/suggestions. We have a difficult and explosive 13-year-old who fits a lot of the characteristics that you describe in The Explosive Child. I like the idea of the collaborative approach, which has started to make our connection with our 16-year-old better, but not the 13-year-old. How to find a collaborative approach to self-care and electronics time, for example. For example, I see that you're having a hard time getting away from your computer. A unilateral four-hour restriction leads to kaboom. So looking for suggestions. Still a straight-A student, but doesn't eat or sleep or brush teeth. or play with friends because it takes away time from the only fun and joy in his life. Any suggestions? Well, now, I've gone first, and Jen, you've gone first. And this is the last email we'll be able to cover today, and only one of us hasn't gone first, and it's not the guy with a really good sense of humor. So, Kim, want to take
this
a
stab? This is payback. Yeah, and the reason why it's payback is that unsolved problems related to screen time and electronics are among the trickiest to solve. Not impossible, but among the trickiest to solve. Right. And so it sounds like there's maybe more than one unsolved problem around electronics. So I'd get real clear on what parents' expectations actually are around electronics. So like this is often what we're talking about when we're talking about screen time. Like we're very clear as parents on what we don't want to happen, but we want to actually define what it is we'd like to see happen. And these are examples. I'm not telling anybody that they should adapt these because every household is different and every kid is different. But for example, if you think that a reasonable expectation around screen time would be, you know, no more than 3 hours of screen time after homework's done on school nights or something like that, right? That's what your actual expectation would be. Then you've got a starting point to work on why that's hard, right? And so, and it is hard because screens are super seductive. We're talking about that a lot these days and for a while now, right? And so, and you're definitely not alone in, you know, having this like kind of plan A, 4 hour, we're not doing this screen thing for this block of time, you know, leading to explosions. I think you're in very good company with many families experiencing that same issue. And yeah, I think be prepared that this is going to take some time. You're going to, you know, need to be aware of, again, the drilling strategies for asking questions in different ways to really understand where he's coming from and really understand, you know, what role the screens are playing for him and what they're doing for him and why it might be hard to end at the end of 3 hours or why it might be hard to hold off until homework's done before he starts. Whatever, again, the expectation might be. But I would be prepared that it's going to take a couple, if not more than a couple, conversations before you actually even are close to arriving at a potential solution. That's what I got. Anybody else want to weigh in?
My only two cents are that trying to get him off at the four-hour mark, first of all, this sounds like a tough situation because it sounds like all that straight A's is the only facet of life that we would say this kid is participating in life on. So I'm glad for the straight A's, but on very few other aspects of functioning is this kid actually participating in life. So we've got a problem here. The fact that setting a limit at 4 hours sets off kaboom. And Kim, this is similar to what you said, but saying it in a different way, tells me that there is the potential in this situation that there is no expectation yet. It sounds like there is no expectation for how long the kid can stay on the screen. And trying to end it at 4 hours sets off kaboom. But what is the expectation? If there's none, we do need an expectation. And then trying to get them off at the four-hour mark is not plan A. What's the expectation? It all starts with that. If he has trouble meeting the expectation, now we have a problem that needs to be solved. But we can't really solve a problem if we don't know what the expectation is that the kid's having difficulty meeting in the first place. Jen, any pearls that you can express in 15 seconds or less?
We had a conversation like that with my son once upon a time where he told us that being on his computer was the only thing that he could control that brought him joy. And that's heartbreaking to hear as a parent, but the way to increase joy in his life was not to take away the one thing that brought him joy. It was to help him find other things that he could add to the list.
I'm very glad you said that.
So
on that note, we're going to have to call it a day. Thank you both, as always, for your insights and pearls of wisdom. We'll be back next week with another program. Take care, everybody.